This morning, Joe.
I'm in Delaware,
Oh, all right.
up in the Northeast.
Okay.
Yeah, bright and crisp and cold outside.
That's John.
Yeah, he was trying to call in, I guess.
Yeah, he just needs to answer rather than call. But there we go. Never mind. Anyway. Would you like to start today?
Well, I had one quick question in one of the
Hangouts.
there he is. Hey, John. One of the hangouts you had with the Washington group, I think it's the second Washington 2, I think is what it's titled.
Yeah.
I believe his name is Mike.
Yeah.
He had mentioned that he wanted to connect, and I didn't know if you're setting something like that up or.
Yeah, I am. I sent out, you should have got an email through the Alpha mail, in which I suggested about a support group for those who are involved in transitioning groups or leaders of existing churches who are looking to embrace this way of doing things, so that they can, A, meet with me, but also support each other in where things are going. I mean, there was a number of them that have expressed an issue interesting that because they're finding it difficult, hitting the wall and coming up against the same things that I've come up against in terms of religious spirit and political spirit and opposition and a whole load of things that will just hinder the process. So yeah, it's something that I've put out there. I think I've had five or six people respond so far. So I will do that again. So.
Okay, yeah, I saw that. I guess I didn't. I'll add my name to the list then.
Yeah. Well, I think it'd be good because I think it's just people have different experiences and they've got different circumstances, but all
Yeah.
going through similar things in terms of looking to access these things, engage, develop blueprints and benches of three and heavenly structure for government. And so I think a support to help and some where the focus would be on those things rather than just general things. I think that's
Okay.
the thing. So I'll certainly be doing that as soon as I can get everyone together and schedule it. Although my schedule is now pretty overloaded. I've just worked out the 20 groups for the alpha thing and tried to fit those 20 groups into my existing schedule, which is they're all on the calendar. Whether that's mooring hope than realistic ability to be able to engage with 30 odd groups in a week, I don't know, but I'm working on it. So that will be another one that I'm sort of adding to the schedule at some stage. Some of it will be interesting because they're in different time zones. Obviously, they're in the Pacific time zone. You're over the east, so that's 3 hours different. I do one group, which is a private group with a bench, that is one's in Seattle and one's in Toronto. So we have worked out a time when they can get together, sort of, but we'll see.
All right, well, great. Yeah, I'll check that out. Thanks, Mike.
Okay. Any other questions and stuff? Okay, Joe.
Yeah, I have one, Mike, and it's feels to me like it's a little out of left field. An experience that somebody had yesterday that I'm aware of. Not sure really how to and where to put it, and it kind of brings up a question about transfer relocation. Not that that's like a focal point or something that I'm pursuing, if you will, as an end in itself, but I believe I've heard, I know on some of Ian's talks, his description of that happening a few times, one where he wakes up in the middle of the night and he's bruised and bloodied and and evidently had actually been somewhere. I'm not sure if you've had any of those experiences yourself yet or not. I'm curious, you know, based on what you're aware of, your experience and your knowledge of others' experiences, is that like this person had kind of went out, doesn't remember anything, but came back, and there were some strange things that had kind of happened in the room, like things were in different places or whatever. Now, this, you know, could have just blacked out for all I know, but the circumstances kind of surrounding it, it just seems very odd, and it just raised the question. It's like maybe that's what happened. Don't know. I guess that leads me to the best question I could formulate would be this: is when that does begin to happen to people, are they always aware that they've been somewhere? Do they remember that, like particularly in the beginning? Do they remember being somewhere? Like it could feel like a dream, like Ian described it, it's like a dream. But when he gets back, he's actually got, you know, blood on his body or something like that. Or
okay, well, I think there's quite a number of different aspects to it. Obviously, you have the pure biblical picture of Philip, who, you know, was with the Ethiopian eunuch and then found himself, you know, a distance apart, you know, at Azotus. So, you know, that was a physical relocation, that he was in one place and then suddenly he's in another. He didn't seem to have much choice about the matter. it's like, you know. Then you have things like Ezekiel, who's, you know, sat down with the elders by the river, and God pulls him by a lock of his hair, it describes, and takes him to Jerusalem to see what's going there. Now, you get the picture there that was more of a translation, or his spirit was somewhere, but his body was somewhere else. So that's a different aspect to it. There's also the whole night watch issue of where your spirit, once it encompasses the soul, can take your spirit and soul to walk in the realms of heaven and remember and be conscious, as opposed to your whole body going, but your body's asleep, at rest, but your spirit and soul are conscious of being in the realm of heaven while you're physically asleep. There are also things of, where your spirit, I go in my spirit to somewhere before I go to sleep, you know, most nights. You know, I go to my garden or I go somewhere to engage. And I can't say I'm conscious of that, so, because it's not, my soul isn't awake, if you like, but my spirit has gone there. And then when I wake up in the morning, often I have a remembrance or something's vividly in my mind, of something that I've encountered during that time while I'm asleep. But my spirit, you know, does not need to sleep, so it's active and awake. And I think that's a case of deliberately choosing to engage your spirit before you go to sleep. I personally haven't really learned how to engage my soul and spirit. A couple of times it's happened, but I can't say I know how to do it. And Ian's teaching on the night watch was somewhat confusing, and didn't really help me at all in terms of how to practice doing it.
Right.
You know. Yeah. So those are sort of some of the different ways that people are engaging. Now, we have had personal experience here. I mean, I've had a personal trans relocation physically, but not by choice. And also in my car, so my whole car was relocated, something like 7 miles up the road or something, in an instant. So that was an instance where it's happened to me, but I can't say I felt anything. You know, I went around a corner and ended up somewhere else. You know, that's what it felt like. This is not what's around that corner. It was like, because I was late for a meeting and I was just driving along and I found myself arriving at the meeting earlier. And because I'd actually taken a reading on my mileage before I left and I measured the mileage on the way back, I found that I think it was something like 5.5 miles or something like that shorter on the trip there than on the trip back, you know, which is one of those, you know, odd things. We've had a few occasions recently of people being engaged in worship and in our meetings on a Sunday and just going in the spirit, being unaware of where they were. Their body's still there. We didn't see them disappear, so their bodies were still there, but they weren't physically, spiritually aware of where they were or conscious of where they were. They went and were taken in space to another place. So they went. One of them went to Russia and ministered to a couple with a child who needed healing, and someone went to somewhere else while they were in the meeting. So they hadn't, but then we're encouraging that because we're encouraging people to go and engage with God and get an assignment for, you know, whether that's an assignment for in the room or assignment for where God would want them to do something somewhere else. And so that's a sort of translation in space. Now there are a number of people who I've also spoken to have been translated also in time and space. And particularly the most powerful testimony of that was where three people had stepped into heaven together to engage God, and they each found themselves in an identical situation of being aware of each other in Oklahoma, I think, in 1800. And they went into a house and ministered to a sick child who was dying. And so that was all. It wasn't a physical thing for their, because their bodies didn't go, but it's like their bodies appeared. So it's like their soul and spirit manifested their bodies so that people saw them. And also the two people that went in their spirit and soul, yeah, I suppose it's the same thing. It wasn't in time, but people saw them. There was an interaction and they were seen. Even though their physical body didn't disappear from here, there was a manifestation of their body that was seen elsewhere because there was interaction with it. These three people all had the identical experience and were able to then talk about it afterwards and were asking me, what do you think it was? You know, my view is when you step into the realms of heaven and you make yourself available to serve the purposes of God, then he can mandate you to go into time and effectively answer someone's prayer back in time. Now, we only think it's back in time because we're linear in this dimension. The realm of the spirit isn't linear, therefore it can be seen as all now. So if someone is praying to God asking for healing in 1800 in Oklahoma, someone who steps into the realm, steps out of 2014 into the realm of the spirit can be used to answer that prayer in 1800, because there weren't too many people who were answering prayers for healing in 1800 in this place, obviously. So God effectively used someone now to go back and administer that. Now, they didn't change time, because that's what always happened. It was the past from our perspective, but it's now in the realm of heaven. So in a sense, that's what happened. And you know, and again, I had a very similar conversation with somebody who was praying, stepped into the realms of heaven on their own, and immediately found themselves in a gun emplacement in Pearl Harbor. Weird. And actually, the person saw them, who was at the gun, had run out of ammunition and was crying out for help. And literally, out of this person's belly, a whole roll of ammunition sort of just came out of them. And, you know, you think, well, what on earth is that about? You know, but you don't know. You don't know. I don't know who that guy was. I don't know who he was protecting with his, you know, weapon. And as a result of that, someone's destiny from 1940, whenever it was, one or two or... I'm English, so I don't quite remember all the details, but you know, I know it was in the
keep up with. Listen, I know you owe me one, because I'm fully aware that King Richard III was positively identified this week.
Yes, that's right.
In fact, I thought, as a sidebar, I thought it was interesting that the article I read identified some DNA markers, you know, and they're they basically talked about adultery in his line. So now his lineage, his personal lineage, is in question. Anyway, 1941.
Yeah. Keep going. Okay. So in a sense, it's like there are lots of instances of this. It is very possible that someone in their spirit is unaware of what happened, and God may have used them in that way. Another aspect to it, if things are moving in a room, it depends whether that was something that they did, an angel did, or something else did. Now, you have obviously instances of poltergeists and different things where there are demonic spirits that shift things and move things, and I've lots of testimonies of where there have been physical manifestations as a result of demonic influence. Now, I'm not saying that's the case in this, but that also is something that does happen. And some of that is very powerful. I mean, there's a testimony I think Ryan Wyatt gives of being at a weekend conference and miracles were taking place, and some a warlock, the second highest warlock in a particular state, turned up on the Monday morning into the church, demanded to see the pastor of the church who'd been involved with this weekend thing, saying, "I want to know whether this is true. We know something went on this weekend. I want to know what power is this." And so took him outside in the winter and said, "Can you do this?" And literally caused a tree to come into full blossom and fruit in front of this guy's eyes. And so the guy was initially freaked out, but had just had some serious encounters over the weekend of God moving powerfully. So he said, "No, I can't do that, but I can do this," and laid hands on him and literally flattened the guy in the spirit, and God just impacted his life. He gets up and basically gave his life to God. And they had to protect him, his identity, because of the danger he was in initially from that group that he was involved in. So, there's a whole load of, stuff that is sort of a bit out there, left field, as you say, but is happening more and more. I mean, there's a girl in China who's a young girl, a teenager, I think, who actually physically gets trans-relocated all over China to different villages and preaches the gospel and literally radiates light. She literally appears as a ball of light, and whole villages turn to God as a result of it. There are many pastors and people who are involved in the house church movement in China who have responsibility for churches that are thousands of miles apart, and they need to step out of their door and be somewhere else. So they do, by faith. And they actually are able to engage with, in relationship to those places by that way. There's a really good testimony of a revival, I think, in one of the sort of jungles in Indonesia or Malaysia or somewhere. And there was this revival going on in a village, and this other village wanted to engage with this. But there was this huge river in flood, and they couldn't get across, so they decided they would walk across. So they walked across the water to get to this village. And they kept doing it, and eventually someone built a bridge, and then they walked over the bridge. And so they no longer needed to walk on the water, because someone actually built a bridge. Now, some of that stuff is just like, it happened, there's testimonies of it. Sort of the miraculous things that happen as a result. Personally, I can't say that I've physically been relocated by choice. I've certainly gone in the spirit. I mean, like twice last week, I went to pray for somebody who was sick in hospital with my spirit and not my body. And so I went in the spirit to the room and laid hands on them in the spirit. And was able to see them and engage with them in the spirit realm. They couldn't see me. Well, they were both completely unconscious, so I'm not sure whether they could see me or not. But I laid hands on them, and both of them are now actually conscious and out of where they were. You know, so there's things like that which I'm practicing and looking to to do more of in that sort of dimension. But it is one of those things that is totally biblical. You know, I mean, it's there in so many things. Things like, you know, Elijah running faster than a chariot. You know, and if you read into Elijah's story, when they were sort of his enemies were saying, you know, he was, I think they were going to arrange a meeting or something, and it was like, well, we know that you won't necessarily turn up, or you'll turn up in a weird way. You know, it's like he obviously had a reputation for appearing in places at times and disappearing from places at times. Now, ultimately, he was taken up, you know, into the realm of the spirit physically and didn't come back. You know, as was Enoch, and as were some others. You know, so there's a lot there. I mean, there's a lot when you actually see, and when you read into the things that happened with Moses and how Moses and the 70 elders went into heaven, and they ate in heaven, and they went on the, you know, the sapphire pavement, and you know, there's a whole load of things there which most Sunday school stories just don't, they skate over because they just can't actually read into the reality of what happened, you know, that they went up. So yeah, they're interesting things that God is bringing out right now.
And I think, you know, just asking again, not that myself or this other person's proactively trying to pursue or make that happen, if you will. If God chooses, God chooses. But you know, there were enough strange things about the circumstance that raise the question. It's like, hey, maybe since we're on this journey and on this path, maybe that, you know,
yeah,
that was really where my curiosity was on that.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, you know, is I don't sort of pass judgment on things in you know, at all in terms of that couldn't happen now, because yeah. I've experienced, seen so many things, and I sort of like, okay, I don't know, but hey, there's an awful lot more possible than I would have imagined that was possible a few years ago for myself, let alone all the other things. So, you know, I now read the Bible with a completely different mindset of its actual literal nature. You know, and those that call the Bible literal actually don't really believe it's literal. They just use that as a way of having their interpretation. But there's a whole load of physical, literal things that we do need to embrace. You know, like engaging the throne of grace. And where is it? And how do I get to it? And how do I draw near to it confidently? Well, it's not in this realm, so I have to be able to access it in that realm. And there are so many scriptures like that which have just been spiritualized because no one envisaged that it was talking about a real thing. Mm-hmm. So it was a spirit, oh, well, I'm just praying, so God will hear my prayers at his throne because my prayers will ascend to his throne rather than, no, I need to go, you know, and draw near. You know, it doesn't say pray, it says draw near. You know, come boldly to the throne of grace. You know, there's nothing in there which indicates that it's just us praying and our prayers go there. You know, but that's how, that was the only way people could interpret it, if there wasn't any possibility of it being real. But now there is a very real possibility of that engagement that people can have, because, you know, there's the revelation that is open for people to step into it, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, good. Yeah, we're moving in the right direction. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else?
I wanted to see if you had any thoughts on business, in kingdom business, if you will, just over, you know, last few years and what you've come into. And, you know, something that you said that really just amazed me when you were in Atlanta is, you know, that God is my provider, you know, and, you know, you didn't ask for people to give, you accepted it if they did, but it was just really, you were all about God is my
provider. Yeah. Well, there's various aspects to, looking at business and what God might do through business and using business to be a generator of kingdom finance. Now, even if I have a business, I still have to see God as my provider, because God may use and choose to use any medium to be able to provide, including a fish that would have money in its mouth. You know, so, you know, God has many, many ways, you know, and I have testimonies who have basically pots of gold or piles of gold dust appear on their carpet, you know, when they had a point in need. Another person was desperate, was going to be evicted from their house, and a bag of money appeared, you know. I mean, so God can do all sorts of things. Now, that doesn't excuse us for being lazy and not you know, because he also says it says in Ephesians, those who don't work don't eat, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that was not talking about those who couldn't work through sickness or ill health or because they couldn't find a job. It was talking about those who didn't want a job and therefore wanted to do nothing. Now, if we're, in a sense, we all work full-time for God, regardless of it, because we do everything as unto the Lord. So everything we do is a service unto God, and therefore should be done with the right attitude and the right heart, and God can use that for our provision. But one of our mountains here in the church here is the Enterprise Mountain, and that Enterprise Mountain does contain the establishing of businesses and entrepreneurship and witty inventions and things that God does to create kingdom finance, you know, and to also help people to rehabilitate their lives and other things that we do. So we have a model that we use in terms of business creation and business generation to help people re-engage in life. And also, we have models where God uses that to meet needs, you know. So for us, it's one of our mountains, you know. Now, there's a whole load more that goes with it in terms of enterprise, which I'm not on that mountain, and, you know, we haven't actually had it shared. It's going to be shared on the 4th of January here, so I'm looking forward to it, because it encompasses a whole load of other stuff. But, you know, God can give people dreams, visions that inspire them to have creative abilities to make finance. You know, I remember reading, I think it's in one of Bill Johnson's books about dreaming, that he quotes a guy who had a dream about how to make a bow, like a bow and arrow bow. And it was a one-piece bow. Whereas most sort of modern fiberglass bows and things, or graphite bows, were two-piece and they had to be put together. He came up with a dream for a plan for it. And actually he then started producing it and then sold on the business or the thing to it, and that funded his life in the kingdom. I think he was a worship leader or something like that, and that was enabled him then to do that because he was financed by it. You know, there are other situations where, you know, people choose to live by faith, as it's called, and they don't actually have a physical job, but they trust God for God's provision. Now, if you do that, then you can't try and help him out. You know, it's not like then I'm going to manipulate things, because we have that all the time. You know, or, well, can I come and speak at your church? Well, why do you want to come? Well, the reason they want to come, because they need the offering. You know, and that's trading on a wrong floor, you know. It shouldn't be that way. But many people do that, and then they bombard everyone with requests to come and preach at their church because actually that's their source of income. You know, and so there's a fine line between saying I'm available and I'm available because I'm actually in need, and if I haven't got these meetings this month, I won't be able to do them. So there's a, you know, a whole thing around it where I'm not against business in the slightest. You know, but I do believe the economic system is going to be somewhat changed in what we're going to walk into in the future, and therefore we need to be prepared to live a different way. You know, and it's very interesting. I was talking to someone yesterday about cities of refuge, and they were saying, well, you know, what is your view of a city of refuge? And then they were saying, well, people are talking about cities of refuge, but what they're doing is stockpiling food, and they're doing this, and they're stockpiling that, and they're making extra rooms. You know, so they're doing something in the natural dimension, having interpreted what a city of refuge it is from that perspective, rather than, okay, my view of a city of refuge is it will be the place where the kingdom is manifested on earth under the rules and laws of heaven and not earth. So we will have the supernatural abilities to be able to manufacture, produce energy, food, water, and whatever else, as well as terraform and shift things around according to that. So in terms of business, we have developed a number of them, and we use those as a income source for some of our social projects, if you like, which engage the community. And we use them to help people in the community get jobs and have meaningful occupation so that they can rehabilitate themselves back into normal everyday life. But it's very clearly you have to have a mandate from God for whatever you do. So if you have a mandate for God to start a business, then it's what is the blueprint for that business? What is the purpose for the business? If it's for your personal finance, that's great. If it's for kingdom finance, then you'll need a whole load more to release that and to sow that into other things. It all depends on the blueprint and what you've been called to. You know, and I know a lot of people are, you know, in things where they don't feel that that's ultimately their destiny and they're in transition to other things. You need a very clear mandate from God to shift what you're doing into something else, because if you're not in faith, having heard that, then you'll struggle. And anyone will struggle if they're doing something because it's a good idea, and then when the pressure comes on, the difficulties come, they find it difficult to press through them because they've not really heard God, or they thought they heard God, and when it comes to, ooh, this is a bit difficult, or maybe I didn't hear God in the first place. So be very clear that you've got a clear blueprint or mandate for whatever you do. You know, then you can call on God, and you can trade on that because he's given you his word. And then you can say, right, you call me to do this. It's your responsibility to provide. You know, and I've done that with God. You know, it says seek first the kingdom. Now, the kingdom is God's rule, his rule associated with my life. So it's his destiny for me. I'm seeking first. So I put that first above everything else. And he says he will do everything else. So he will meet all the rest of the needs. And it talks about don't worrying about where you live or, you know, what you're going to eat, what you're going to wear and those things. And therefore I hold him to that. So I'm too busy to do a whole load of things that people who aren't as busy as I can do. So I trust God to do them. Yeah, and when he isn't doing them or appearing not to do them, then I go and challenge him on it. You know, and he's perfectly fine with that because he wants me to remember the covenant that I have with him, which is of exchange. I give him my life. He gives me everything I need in my life to be able to fulfill his purpose. You know, but you have to have a relationship with God, which is pretty intimate, to be able to do that. You know, I wouldn't have done that a number of years ago, or I wouldn't even seen it from that perspective a number of years ago, but I do now. You know, so I am aware of God's provision. And, you know, I'm also aware of the dangers of, you know, financial issues, because that's a major trading floor that the enemy uses to create fear, control, manipulation, and a whole lot of other things that are associated with finances in our lives. You know, but certainly business, totally see that God is using people to create businesses and giving them ideas and inventions and things to provide finance, you know. Yeah.
You and I've listened to a lot of things in regards to getting a mandate and what that looks like, and it's just really just a process for me. Anyway, and it's like, and the more I listen to people, you know, it's a very small percentage of people that just feel like they really have a clear mandate on anything. You know, it's kind of hearing the voice of God is like, you know, I really feel a draw towards this.
Oops. Yeah. That may be true, but I think the percentage of people that have heard God are increasing. And it's about training our senses to be able to hear God clearly. You know, you know, that's part of this process is, you know, to be able to get a mandate, to be able to say, yes, I can have a conversation with God in which it's two-way and I'm speaking and he's speaking and we're in that relationship, you have to develop the spiritual senses to do it, which is, you know, why I'm doing the whole Engaging God manual is to help equip people to be able to do that. But it takes practice, you know, a lot of practice, you know. You know, I'm essentially in the Engaging God manual, sort of squashing in 15 years of my life, you know, into four or five sessions of, if you do this and you consistently do it, then it will enable you to hear God, it will enable you to talk to Him, it will enable you to see Him, and it will enable you to perceive in the realm of the Spirit. But you have to practice, and therefore you've got to have a renewal of our minds to enable us to, A, believe that that's possible, and have the perseverance to continue pursuing it until we can do it. You know, I mean, I am sort of a pretty fairly disciplined sort of guy, so if I want something, I'll have it, you know. So I'll go after it until I get it, you know, and I won't think about, oh, cool, the cost of it. It will be, right, I want it, I'm going to get it, and I'll do whatever it takes. You know, but not everyone's has developed that or is like that personality-wise, you know, and therefore you have to build that up, you know. And so create the desire, you know. For me, it's like I create a desire within my heart by meditating and thinking about it and in beholding it so that I can see that outworked. You know, and therefore I'm pursuing that, and God will release the desires of our hearts. Obviously, it's better if the desires of our hearts are aligned with His desire for us, rather than our own desires as shaped by the world in which we live. But sometimes He will give us the desires of our heart if we pursue Him enough, even if it isn't an alignment with His will. And you'll find that in the Word all the time, that it wasn't God's total purpose for that, but He still did it because people asked Him. You know, it wasn't for God's purpose that Israel would have a king. He was their king, but He still gave them the king. You know, then they had to, you know, suffer the consequences of what they asked for. You know, so we have to be careful, you know, what are the desires, and it's really helpful to find, to understand what would motivate the desires of our heart, because that's the process of separating the thoughts and intentions of our heart and what motivates us. But you know, you can practice and you can hear God, you know, but it takes time. You know, I practiced in the Word and I heard God speak to me through or in the Word. Not like, well, I got a sermon out of the Word, but I heard Him speak and give me revelation directly as a spontaneous flow into my mind, where the Holy Spirit was speaking to me about what I was meditating on. Well, you know, that isn't going to necessarily happen the first time you do it. You have to build your spirit. You know, you don't get muscles unless you do a lot of manual labor or you go in the gym and you build. You know, I've tried some of the shortcuts, and I know other people who did try some of the shortcuts to get in big muscles. None of them worked. You know, one of my friends like decided they wanted a six pack, but they decided they wanted to do it by sitting down watching the TV and putting little electrodes on their muscles that would stimulate their muscles and produce a six pack. And surprise, surprise, it didn't work. And it was another one of those pieces of kit that ended up in the loft because it didn't work. You know, and there are probably a few pieces of exercises equipment that people have got that offered them shortcuts to what they really desired and didn't work, you know, because that's how people make their money, offering us shortcuts. That's how the devil makes his money, offering us shortcuts to trade for things out of time. He offered the same thing to Jesus. You know, here are all the kingdoms of the world. You can have these if you just bow down to me. Now, fortunately, Jesus didn't accept that, you know. Adam and Eve did accept it, which got us into a whole lot of trouble. And going for shortcuts and trading wrongly for things that will give us instant gratification rather than long-term gain are things the enemy will offer us all the time. And we've got to be careful that we don't buy into that, you know, and be willing to be disciplined to train our senses through practice. You know, that's what Hebrews says, you know.
Yeah, good. Thanks, Mike.
Okay. Keep looking. Anyone else got anything?
Well, Mike, I got another just general question. You had mentioned in one of the Hangouts recently about how doing like a virtual church or online church. Is that something you guys are doing over there now, or that's something you can talk about?
Yeah. I mean, I've talked about it before. I mean, in principle, I'm aware that because I've connected up with a lot of people around the world, a lot of people find that they just cannot find a local expression of a congregation that reflects where we're going and this new order of things. They just can't find it. But they want fellowship. They also want accountability. They want teaching. They want to be able to be part of a vision that is going in the direction that God wants us to go. And so they're finding it difficult. And some people just don't fit. You know, they've been branded, you know, troublemakers, weird, you know, flaky, because you know we're engaged in heaven. You know, and so they struggle where they are, and a number of those people have expressed a desire to connect with us in that we would provide them with a way of interacting and have access to the teaching and the vision and feel part of that. And so we are, although we are not yet advertising that directly, because we've not yet get full infrastructure to be able to cope with the numbers of people who might take advantage of that and provide. Because it's not like I know sort of virtual church, like web church, or different expressions of that have you know have been set up and do operate. But I want whatever it would do. I want something to be relational and that people can connect. So you know we would want to live stream our worship services or record them so that people could engage in them rather than it just be, okay, well, they read a blog or they listen to some material or see me teach. You know, there needs to be ongoing support and encouragement. So we're working on it. It is part of the vision that God has given us to be a resource to people. It's not that we're against local expressions of church. We are one, you know. It's just we have a larger remit than that, but it doesn't mean that we're not impacting our local community or having relationship with people. And we wouldn't want to do that as an excuse so that people don't have to have any personal contact with each other. Because if there are issues, why people struggle with relationship because of past things or unresolved forgiveness or stuff like that, then we want to encourage people to sort those things out. But I know genuinely there are a number of people who just can't find the place where they can express themselves and be who God's called them to be. And if they are part of the, say, the living stones of our blueprint, then we would help them facilitate that and be open for that type of support and encouragement as much as we can do to give them. You know, and we are open for people to come here and be part of us. You know, we have a lady from Germany who moved here to be with us because she just felt that's what God wanted her to do, you know. And a number of people request, you know, well, can we come over for a certain time? And you know, and we do have a number of people who have said, look, we feel that this is our church, if you like, or ecclesia, let's call it in terms of a wider way of thinking of it. Even though we live in different places. You know, and so they support us financially as well as just in relationship, and a number of people, they're just blessed by the material and that's the level it goes, but for some they want something more, and you know that's there, and we know that will increase, I guess, because we want to equip people ultimately to establish government where they are, and some people need support and connection in that before they can do it. You know, and it's hard when you're on your own. I mean, you know, it's hard. So I feel for some of these guys that they're on their own, finding it really difficult, lonely, in a sense. We want to be able to help, you know. So, yeah, there's nothing officially broadcast or whatever, but, you know, we are connecting with people, and, you know, and we had no problem if people do feel that that's what they would like to do, you know, because, you know, God's doing new things. You know, ultimately, we're all going to have to interact and connect in heaven. You know, if suddenly there was a magnetic pulse that wiped out all the communication devices, we were going to have to communicate in different ways. You know, that's why we can step into heaven together and we can communicate there. You know, and that will be something that we will do. And when we've reclaimed the atmosphere of the earth, that creates a communication device right around the earth, which again will be something that we will learn to do. Because principalities are not just demons, there are areas of connectedness in territory for government. Territorial spirits are not all bad. You know, God has assigned angels to territories who have responsibility for territories, and there's communication that can take place in that dimension and realm. But, you know, so, yeah.
Good, thanks. That's good. Thanks, Mike.
Okay. Anything else? Some time?
I don't have any other burning question at the moment myself. Right. AC, you got anything?
Nothing burning right now. I know Peter's got a list, though. He always has a list.
Looks like if you got anything there, Peter, you got the space.
Well, I guess what you just mentioned, the thing about government, how do you see us getting to that place of being able to do some of those things like you're talking about, you know, the atmosphere of the earth and taking those places of being those principalities, instead of evil but good, and holding those places over regions or areas or whatever? How do you see that actually practically outworking?
Well, I personally see the establishing of cities of refuge, apostolic resource centers that are embassies of heaven, being the key expression of it on earth, that will be the place where we see the kingdom and the government of God extended. You know, there is no end to the increase of his government, so his government has to be, it's almost like we need to have gardens on earth that are connected to Eden and begin to look like that paradise of God, in spite of the rest of the world may be in desert, but we actually can live in connection and under the laws of heaven on earth. But to do that, we have to administer that from heaven, because everything in this order has to be done beyond the veil. The government has to be established there so that the gateway of that government can be outworked here. And so there's you know, many dimensions of how that will take place. Once those cities of refuge take place, the way God has described them to me, or I've seen them in a vision, is really that they are walls of fire. You know, there's a scripture, I think it's in Zechariah, that talks about the church being a place without walls, but actually having walls of fire. And it's literally that they will be pillars of fire that are deposits, if you like, or wells of anointing that actually go up into the atmosphere. But it's not like we're trying to change the atmosphere from here, but literally they're connecting heaven and earth. It's like the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire that they followed in the wilderness was a manifestation of heaven's presence on earth, and was an angelic manifestation. And I believe that when we are connecting and bringing government here from heaven as gateways, then it will then go up and form a canopy of fire over. When those cities of refuge join together in relational government for regions, cities, nations, then that canopy of fire will clear the atmosphere. And there's a whole process of going through that in terms of the angelic and their role in it. But I certainly believe that that's something that will take place on the earth as a result of what is being authorized and mandated in heaven. To do that, you have to have a blueprint and a mandate to establish a city of refuge. You know, and we're not talking about just sort of local church government here. We're talking about something much more strategically important in what God is going to be doing in what's coming. And therefore, you have to have a clear apostolic mandate to do that and a blueprint which establishes that on the earth. And there are many different blueprints, and not all of them will be for those. But in what's coming, every other blueprint will need to be associated with one of those, otherwise they're going to be in trouble. You know, and so when we're looking at heavenly government, then we're looking about legislation. And what we're learning to do now is we're learning to outwork the principles of the kingdom as lords in the realm of the kingdom of God. As we are faithful in operating in the lordship of administrating mandates that are already there and legislation that is already in place, then we then will be given higher roles of authority, and we can call that kingship if you like, and we begin to legislate, and therefore we have access to the court of kings and the different strategy courts and the different dimensions of the assemblies of heaven to be able to legislate what's going on in the earth. I mean, the Galactic Council is the ultimate expression of that from an earthly perspective. I know Ian's view of that is interesting, in that he feels that there are 70, and some of them are positionally in that place but don't know of its existence or actually know how to operate there, but actually their whole lives has been a call into a governmental sphere. But he's expecting that those 70 are going to be replaced by those who are actually actively going there and engaging and administering the affairs of the nations from that place. And so we're in this transition from what has been to what will be. I haven't got an opinion over that specifically. I know I've been there, and I know God is looking for a generation who will serve the purpose of God in their generation, and therefore those 70 need to be from our generation, and they're not right now, all of them. His thing is that there are going to be, over the next 10 years, many great men of faith who are going to pass. And he quoted Bob Jones as the first, who basically passed to allow another generation to arise. I don't know, some of that is interesting stuff. But literally, you know, there is a table in heaven that releases the blueprints for government. And our administration of creation will be totally different from what it is now. And as we embrace government, I believe the roles of the chancellors, the roles of the 12 chancellors' houses, those roles will fall to men who are operating in the realms of heaven, because that's what they're always intended to be. They're being caretaked, if you like, by angelic beings who will become the administrators for the men who are called to those positions of government. And hence, there are those being raised up for the tectonic plates, there are those being raised up to shift the nations, and there's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of activity to prepare people for those positions of government. You know, I think everything is going to be different. I mean, it is very difficult to describe what has never existed. It is, you know, even though when you see it in, well, you see it in the word, people saw things that never existed and were finding only the words that they knew in their current, in their existing thing to describe what they were seeing. You know, how would you describe something that you'd never seen in terms that you didn't have? You'd have to use some sort of analogy or something to help describe it. And Paul said, these things are inexpressible. You know, he was seeing into the how the realm of the spirit functioned and the realm of understanding quantum engagement. And how could he describe that? He couldn't. It was inexpressible. You know? So yeah, I mean, there's a whole lot. The main thing is follow the process. Walk in his ways. Be faithful in the stewardship that we've got in this realm. Be drawn into intimacy to become friends of God. And then accept the commission, the mandates given to operate in lordship, kingship, sonship, continuing to be faithful at each level, humbling ourselves under his mighty hand, letting him exalt us, not looking for position, not looking for recognition, not looking for people to recognize us, but to be recognized in heaven, looking for the angelic recognition that we are reflecting heaven on earth, that we are also in a position of government. So when we are on our mountains, then heaven recognizes that. Ultimately, we to sit on in the places where we're seated with Christ, and that's a different dimension of government than when we're on our mountain. You know, and again, we'll learn how to engage that. But, you know, I know there's a lot of activity. I know that a lot of people are having encounters, a lot of the forerunners, a lot of people are engaging wisdom, which is key in this, because she will definitely help us with the protocol of government. You know, but you don't, if you can't bring government in and through your own life, you're not going to be able to do it through any other form of a bench of three, you know. So for me, a bench, someone who's on a bench of three has to have the government of God operating in their own life. Because they are a bench of three. They're spirit, soul, and body functioning together. Now, I'm not saying it's all perfection, because we're in the process, and God is teaching us as we go. But, you know, there has to be a degree where we're functioning in our own mountain before we can function on a corporate mountain. You know, otherwise we won't have learned to be faithful with administering the principles of the kingdom in and around our own spheres of government. You know, and then as we're faithful, those that are called to higher spheres of government and into particular roles within the realms of heaven will begin to get those things released, and they'll have encounters where God will release them and give them things like, you know, scepters and then orbs and seals and different things as symbols of what they've been given in terms of authority. You know, but it is for us to administer creation. It was always God's intention that we should do so. You know, it's just Adam and Eve were offered the shortcut to do it without God. You know, and they entered into a covenant and accepted a pathway that, you know, wasn't a good result. You know, so we must always be aware not to take shortcuts. You know, not to be tempted to take a shortcut and trade wrongly, but to follow the right path. You know, and some of those things will lead us back to ancient paths, and some of the ancient hooded ones who are turning up to get us engaged with, you know, what our eternal destiny is, and, you know, all this is part of it. I mean, it's such a huge thing. But I know it's happening, you know, and I know from just talking to people and some of the things, you know, there's a huge issue right now about engaging the sapphire pavement and the sapphire cube. Just massive stuff going on, you know, because that's all about this place where government gets released. And it's where, you know, Moses, God called Israel as a nation to be a nation who administered the world and were the light for the world and would administer the world out of heaven. and they sent Moses. Yes, 70 elders went, but ultimately it was like, well, no, Moses, you do it. You know, and that wasn't God's intention, that one person should do it. Yeah. So, you know, we are now having restored what was contained within that sapphire cube of the understanding of how to administrate heaven and how to administrate earth from the spiritual dimensions. And so I think there's a lot of that which is just seemingly independently. People are getting visions, pictures, experiences, encounters with this sapphire floor, engagement with sapphires, engagement with the sapphire pavement, with the sapphire queue. You know, I've been there myself, so I know, you know, we had a 12 meeting a few weeks ago, and I think we stepped into heaven to look at our scroll and look at different pages within our book, if you like, and, you know, I think five or six of us saw the same geometric, you know, you call it sacred geometry, Metatron's cube, which just has this geometric dimensional shape, which is really what this whole thing's about, and the spheres of government and how they interact and how the different governmental spheres, you know, and the different pathways cross and connect. I mean, it's pretty weird stuff. I mean, I found some good pictures of it, and, you know, that sort of describe some of the things that I've personally seen. And but when I know, when you step into heaven and you see five of you see these things and you start seeing them from slightly different perspectives, but you're all drawing pictures that are like, oh, my picture was rubbish. I mean, it's like, you know, I'm just not an artist. So it was like, but someone recognized, wow, yeah. And I saw someone else was drawing. It's like, yeah, wow, something's doing something. You know, because he's preparing and shifting things for the revelation that's been locked up to be unveiled, the mysteries to be revealed. You know, they're hidden for us to find so they can be revealed. And some of this stuff sounds pretty weird and has pretty weird connotations, but actually it is happening independently in various places around the world, and that are starting to see these shapes and these sort of cubes and different things. I mean, I'll show you some of them, because it's like they're quite interesting. But you know, there's that one, and then there's that one, and there's that, which is, you know, I've experienced that. You know, there's this cube and the facets and the things. I've been in there. That one, definitely encountered that one, because that's the two triangles of heaven and earth, you know, the government of heaven and then the reflection on earth overlap to form the Star of David, if you like. Again, you know, having dimensional, governmental understanding of the four faces of God and other things. I mean, there's a load of stuff, you know, that one's another one, which is a picture that represents some of these spheres and how they're beginning to interact, you know. So That in itself is an indication. I mean, that's sort of how Metacron's crude forms. It's like it has all these dimensions within it of different shapes of geometry that are connected governmentally with, like, the two forming an arc, and the three forming government, and the four forming a window, and the five, you know, and the seven and the 12 and different things. So, you know, they're interesting, and I find it quite interesting that God is unveiling those things at this point, because I know there's this governmental shift coming. So there we go.
Yeah, well, I've seen that and interacted with that more of that crystal cube, like a clear cube. I saw it on my throne one time, and then and also in going on our blueprint, I saw like the Star of David around our. The blueprint, yep. That I saw. In fact, that's how we're drawing it on our diagram. So that's interesting. Cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and personally, we are experiencing this actually in our meeting. in that we're having this overlap between heaven and earth, and we're having a connection between the four angels that have been assigned and the four faces of God, and they are interacting to form arcs where people are stepping in and engaging with this, and it's opening up a portal to go into a realm of heaven and go deeper into it. and it's happened to me a number of times, and other people are experiencing it. It's done through colors and flags and different geometric shapes on those flags, which God is just doing. I mean, it's real. I mean, you know, when it overlaps and you can step into it here, which is what's happening with us, you know, I'm going to have to try to explain it, you know, because some people are experiencing it. You know, I saw it one Sunday morning, so I said, look, this is what I'm seeing, you know, this is what's happening. Now people are saying, you need to explain that. What happens when the lion and winds of chains interact? You know, what happens? So I'm sort of preparing that for a couple of weeks' time to share it. You know, I mean, it's pretty interesting. You know, some of the portals that God showed me are open for people, but we'll see. But it's all part of the same thing. You know, this pattern, vibration, frequency, you know, whatever, you know, it's all part of that, really, where, you know, God is just opening up our realms of understanding. And it sounds really weird, it looks really weird, it's, you know, it's like, well, what's all that about? But it is where the realms of government interact and overlap and connect, and how these dimensional things of the manifold wisdom and manifold grace of God get outworked. You know, when I was in that sapphire cube, it was like there were just facets of light and angles, and which was just like, whoa, I can't contain this. I couldn't. You know, my mind could not contain it. Fortunately, my spirit has a greater capacity than my mind to contain things. And as I engage with it, it's opened up this understanding. You know, I suddenly started to see things and experience things that I didn't do before. You know, because my spirit now has something encoded there which is beyond my ability to actually describe or understand right now. But I know God is going to unveil that and open it up, because there is a huge shift in government coming. You know, there is a huge shift in government coming, which we have to be ready to embrace and outwork. And, you know, for some it's like, you know, I don't know what you're talking about, you know, this is weird. But that's because heaven is different and earth is not like heaven, but actually it should be. You know, it was always intended to be, you know, and it isn't, so we need to transform it so it is. You know, so that means we need a good handle on what it's like in heaven so that we can actually know what to transform on the earth. You know, but it's pretty interesting stuff anyway. There we go. Okay. All right.